Shut up indoors for fear of what is lurking outside. Fear of those who carry with them what might be for us a death sentence. That is how many must now live. In the space of a few days, our world was changed in ways we could never have imagined. Perhaps this helps us approach the gospel reading today with our sensitivities increased. Our enemy is invisible, an infinitesimally tiny virus which has brought our way of life to its knees. They were afraid that those who had so recently hounded their leader to death were after them next. Their enemy might find them at any moment. Armed soldiers might batter down the locked door. That was their fear. Instead, it was Jesus who came to them through locked doors with a word of peace. That was their scarcely believable joy. They have come a long way in a few days. A crucifixion at midday, an encounter in a garden at dawn, and now at dusk, the man who was supposed to be dead standing in their midst. In the garden at daybreak, Mary Magdalene was told not to touch him. Now, as night falls, he invites Thomas to reach out his hand to touch the wounds. Touch is significant in the Gospels. The touch of Jesus heals. The faith of the woman who touched the hem of his garment made her whole. In our lockdown, we are largely deprived of it through fear of the consequences. One day, we shall embrace one another and learn again the joy of human contact. Dawn comes to Mary with grief, which turns into scarcely believable joy. Dusk comes to the disciples in fear and ends with a blessing of peace. All these opposites are an essential part of the Easter story. William Blake expresses it beautifully in a poem from Auguries of Innocence. Joy and woe are woven fine, a clothing for the soul divine. Under every grief and pine runs a joy with silken twine. It is right it should be so. We were made for joy and woe. And when this we know, safely through the world we go. We tend to think of times of woe and grief as unwelcome interruptions to the smooth course we plan, crosses we have to bear until brighter days arrive. But Blake insists our joy and our woes are tightly bound together. When they come, we need to make room for them, learn to understand how they form the warp and weft of our lives into a clothing for the soul divine. When we do that, we find our way safely. The same is true about the other opposing forces in this story, doubt and faith, fear and reassurance, warp and weft, woven so closely together that the cloth cannot be made without both. We don't know why Thomas missed that first evening of resurrection. We're not told that he actually touched the wounds of Jesus, only that he was invited to do so. Artists have interpreted this differently. During the first 30 years of the 17th century, Catholic Caravaggio has Thomas stick his finger right inside the wound. Catholic Rubens shows Thomas simply looking at an outstretched hand. Protestant Rembrandt paints the moment when Thomas acknowledges Jesus as his Lord and God. Each offers a different perspective on the same moment. There isn't one simple fixed meaning, but many. And together, they reveal how the fabric of our salvation is woven out of fear and incredulity, out of finding Christ unexpectedly in our midst, and out of our response to all these materials, not just one of them. We may find the skepticism of Thomas chimes well with our demand for evidence rather than relying on hearsay or being told what to believe. But when it comes, his confession of faith goes further than anybody else's. But we weren't there. We only have these sketchy accounts in the Gospels. So Jesus seems to reach out across future generations and speaks of the blessedness of those who, like us, have not seen, but yet have come to believe. What does John mean by this word believe? Trace it through his gospel, and you find that it means so much more than affirming a set of statements. It's one of his key words. It's there from the beginning. To all who received him, who believed in his name, he gave power to become children of God. And there's scarcely a chapter in which it doesn't appear. To believe in his name is at heart a response to what we see and hear as we follow in his steps. The living embodiment of God at work among us, lifting us out of a life dominated by fear into one which takes its shape and purpose from Christ. It's a willingness to trust his wisdom, be changed by his words, transformed by the love he reveals in life, in death, and beyond. Does Christ come to us through our lockdown, when the world we thought so secure has suddenly become so uncertain? He does, in countless small acts of kindness, as people learn again that a neighbour is anyone who is in need, in the selfless devotion of those who risk and even give their lives to care for the suffering and dying and to maintain the fabric of society, in the army of volunteers in every community, bringing friendship and practical assistance to those who cannot leave their homes. But there's more to it than that. Today we learn that he comes to his disciples when they gather together in fear. There was no need for them to meet. The risks were great. But they met because something greater than fear had already bound them together. At the moment, we can't gather as we usually do in church. But technology is allowing us to share in ways we never could have done before. Through all our worries and our anxieties, I do not doubt that he comes to us in these new ways of meeting, and that they too are becoming a new means of grace. Amen.